You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Welcome to Radical Australian Community Radio 3CR. Daryl, the producer, is lining up our guest. No, he's not put him on a wall and we're going to shoot him. No, he's giving him a call. Laurie's 86, and we felt that it's a long way to come into the studio, so we'll do a telephone interview with Laurie. He's quite an interesting human being, like all our guests here on Radical Australia. And in a few seconds or a few minutes, we will get to speak to him. Next week, we will be doing a repeat because we both won't be here for the afternoon for a variety of reasons, all legal, I assure you. So we'll see how we go with young Laurie. He's not answering. Well, we've arrived. Daryl has arrived. Yeah, it's good. Yep. Ah, an answering machine. Wow, this is live radio. This is what happens. Now, Daryl, I'm going to ring you on my bloody phone and see where you are. Where are you hiding, Daryl? This is ridiculous. Yeah, you're there. Where's Laurie hiding? Can't believe this. An answering machine. Maybe he's giving us the flick, mate. This is what happens when you do live interviews. You don't know what's going to happen. Yeah, we'll see how we go.
You did say he's 85 years old.
86. Yeah, he's 86. There we are. We're ringing everywhere, but this is what happens, you know, in a live show.
He's not answering his phone, I'm afraid.
Oh, well, we'll try again. I'll try him again on this phone and we'll see how we go. Right. But in the interim, I understand you had a illustrious career as a musician, Daryl. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was a long time ago in my younger days.
What did you do? Well, I tried to ring up this number.
I did the usual rock band scene.
Yeah.
Doing the Fitzroy and Collingwood Richmond circuit. Well, I was 9, 10 years.
Yeah.
With an orchestra.
Yep.
100-piece orchestra. That was
100-piece?
Yeah.
What do you mean 100-piece orchestra?
Well, it was a full-size orchestra. Yeah. You had your string section, your horn section.
Yeah. And what section were you on?
In the percussion section.
Were you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we'll see if we can find Laurie. It's an interesting... We found Laurie. Oh, he's on line two. Oh, brilliant. There we go, Daryl. People were so bored with your music career. We've got Laurie now. Hello, Laurie. Are you there?
Good, mate. Yeah, good. I'm here.
You're here.
I'm sorry. I was talking too long to a woman.
Hang on, mate. Look, you're 86 and you were talking to a woman. We don't want to know about this crap, mate. Yeah. You should be retired from that activity.
I said I want to put some drops in my ear, the wax. For the ears, you know.
Oh, yeah.
She put them in 2 days and then drop off, you know.
Oh, you weren't doing a telehealth. That was more important than talking to us, mate.
Yeah.
I can't believe you. Well, it's good that you put the drops in your ear.
No, I was on the phone so long because it wasn't... She was talking to me about other things and I got carried away when I was talking to her.
It was. I'll tell you a little trick. With a telehealth conversation, if you're a doctor, you need to be on the phone for at least 6 minutes before you get paid. So don't think they're being kind to you, mate.
They'd be nice to me in the area because they want to know who I've left the house to all the time.
Didn't you leave it to Daryl and me?
I've left it to me dogs, and as I told you the other day, I told you, the RSL come here after I come out from breaking my hip last year.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, you can't leave it to the dogs, Laurie. I said, hey, I bought it for me dogs. So I leave it to whoever I want to leave it to.
Can I tell you a story, a true story? Happened about 20 years ago in the peninsula. This bloke had a fair bit of money. He left his estate to the cat, right? But he also paid somebody to stay in the house and look after the cat. On the proviso that when the cat died, he'd lose his money. So that cat lived for over 20 years. And then it went to some charities. Now, Laurie, what year were you born?
25th of August, 1940. In two weeks' time, I'll be 85.
85. You're right, Daryl. I said he was 86 and you said you're 85. Yeah. How did you know that, Daryl, that he was 85, not 86?
A guess.
Guess. Yeah. Where were you born?
Here at the Women's Hospital in Carlton.
Right. And
I found out. And I had to do my truck licence and come up with my birth certificate.
Yeah.
And about 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And I rang up the birth desk and they told me.
Yeah.
And who my mother was.
Yep.
I never met her because she had me at 3:20 in the morning.
Right.
And they brought me up to show her to 11 o'clock and she got up and walked away and left me.
That was it?
And she wasn't married, though, you see. Right, that's what
right.
happened.
So you
could, I thought it might have been religion, but it's nothing to do with religion.
Could
the marriage part of it.
Yeah, it could have been your war baby and, you know, things happened.
Never worried me.
No.
Because
so what happened to you? I mean, if she kind of walked out, what happened to you?
The nurses took me home until I could stand up and they give me a photo they sent here with the tag thing around my toe.
Right.
Who I was.
Yeah.
And me weight and me length and all that.
Right.
And verified by the sister.
Right.
And they sent another photo to me and they put me in the Far West Children's Home in Manly in Sydney.
So you're...
And when I was 3 years old.
So were you born in Sydney or you were born in Melbourne?
Melbourne, yeah, but Dave sent me to Sydney to the Far West Children's Home.
When you were three?
Yeah. When I was a bit over one. The moment I stood one. Up.
Right.
They let me go then.
Right.
And I got the photo in here on the wall.
Right.
When I'm standing up, but a bit after one.
Right. Are we talking about nursing sisters or the, you know, our religious Catholic sisters looked after? Were the people who were looking after you for your first year, were they?
They were the nurses that were working at the hospital where I was born.
Right. That's extraordinary.
They took me home.
Right. That's extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, well, people looked after you good like that. And then when I was 10, I met a woman. She said, oh, I'm your grandmother.
Right.
And she said, if I had known that was going to happen, she said, I would have come and got you, Lawrence. You know?
Right.
So she had 11 children with them.
Right.
And then she left her husband.
Yep.
And it would be my grandfather if I was with him.
Right.
And she got another bloke and she had 3 more daughters to him.
Right.
She had 14 children.
Altogether.
So right. I don't think I'd be in the way. One extra one wouldn't have mattered.
No. So how did your grandmother find you?
Well, she found me through the bloke that's, what's his name, at Hampton.
Yeah.
And he was her son, Jim Turner.
Right.
And he said, oh, yeah, we found out where Lawrence is. That's me, you see.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they found out. And then she came here to Heidelberg.
Right.
And I had a bungalow there.
Right.
And well, I'll remember it.
Right.
The woman gave me a bungalow to live in.
What, at the age of 10? At the age of 10?
Yeah.
You were transferred from Sydney to Melbourne?
Yeah. Oh, they come and brought me back here. Or somebody got me, yeah.
Right.
Then she gave me a pound note.
Right.
It was like winning Tats Lotto a million times over.
Right.
950.
Yeah.
I went to the pitches, it cost you 9 pence.
Yeah.
We could go 20 times, more than 20 times, you know.
You didn't go see the same movie 20 times, did you, Lawrence?
Well, I meant it. If you went in the city to the Regent or the Plaza, it was like going to New York, you know.
Yeah. What was life like in Sydney for you as a young boy?
I was in an orphanage.
Yeah.
And we were all together because a lot of the children there had come from England where their families had been killed.
Right.
With the bombing, you see.
Yeah.
And a couple from Scotland too.
Mm.
Their families would have been killed by the Luftwaffe, I suppose, you know.
Right. So you're living in dormitories, were you?
Yeah.
Right.
Because the only trouble was you get very tight with both girls each side of me.
Uh-huh.
And next thing, they're gone and you're left by yourself and then all of a sudden you're gone and they haven't got you anymore, you know.
Right. So it's...
The bloke used to come and get me out and take me. He was with MacArthur, you know, the general that went to the Philippines.
Oh, yes.
and he was with him, and his wife was here, and he had a daughter about my age, and that's where he got that photo in there when I was about 3 or 4.
Right.
And he used to take me out with his own daughter and his wife.
Right.
And they said, oh, they'll come back and get me and take me to America. It wouldn't have mattered because whatever America does, we do too, so that's it.
Yeah, so that didn't ever eventuate it, obviously.
Yeah, we've got to just, you know.
So you're living in a bungalow in Heidelberg by yourself at the age of 10?
Yeah, it was just a commission. Oh, they looked after me. People looked after me, I mean that.
Right, right. What, they'd feed you and bring you food?
And I first went on the street when I was 8.
What do you mean you went on the street when you were 8?
Well, I had to move out of a house. It was too dangerous for me to live there.
Right. So you're living on the streets, age 8?
Yeah, and I was just sleeping in old cars and...
This is in Sydney.
Yeah,
right.
But it never worried me because when I was running around with, they went in to get a jam sandwich. They'd bring me out one.
Yeah.
And then the parents would say, "Come in, as the plate in here for your lunch," you know.
Right.
And they'd give me food. Everybody looked after me.
Right.
All in the commission area up there in West Heidelberg, you know.
Right. So in West Heidelberg, and how long did you live in that bungalow for? A few years or?
I decided to get back on the street. And when I got to 13, I got a weekly times and I got a job out at Mount Eva Station up before you get up to Kivafiti working on the station. Which
right.
You get jobs, you see, on station properties.
Yeah. At 13?
Yeah.
That was 53. So what were you doing on the station?
As long as you had a pair of long trousers.
Right. you didn't need a shirt or shoes, just long trousers.
You didn't, but made sure you got a pair of long trousers.
Why is that?
Well, jeans were starting to come on the scene then.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got a pair of black denim jeans.
Right. And what were you doing on the station?
I was doing pulling out when they were crutching.
Crutching
800 a day, and I was pulling out the 800. That's how fit I was.
Right, right.
The duck boards for the shearers there.
Yeah, Daryl's a bit confused here. Daryl, put your microphone on and ask the lad what crutching is.
Yeah, what's crutching?
Bloody city slicker, isn't he, Laurie?
Yeah.
He doesn't even know what crutching is. Explain it to him.
Well, I went everywhere as a kid. I went up to Cobar, Hilston, Lake Angelico.
Yeah.
Griffith, there was nothing there them days.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you went over in the Randa, that's an old place.
Yeah.
So you're more of a rouseabout then.
Well, you had to do it. You got the weekly times and you get the jobs out of that, you see.
Yeah.
On properties.
Did anybody kind of say, oh, you're only 13, mate, or were you a big lad or what?
Nah.
You're a small lad. Now, crutching, Daryl, is when you... cut out the balls of a bloody sheep, all right? You crutch it, yeah.
Ah, right.
I
was pulling out for them, out of the pens. It was in the open, you see. They'd set up a duckboards, the hand pieces going.
Yeah.
You had to drag the, once you got them on their bums, you just drag them back to them. As quick as you get it, you had to get another one.
Yeah.
But had to crutch.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's 800 a day, you know.
That's a lot of crutching.
Yeah.
So how long...
I hadn't have went on the brick cart, and I would have went into the shearing shed.
Hang on. So you didn't last in the country. You decided to come back to the city or something?
Aye.
Did you decide to come back to the city?
Yeah, I love the city, yeah.
Yeah, what did you like about the city as a 14-year-old?
If you go to places like Wagga, was a big place.
Yeah.
And Narendra was a reasonably big place, old place. But once you come to Melbourne, it's like going to New York, you know.
Yeah. Did they let you in the pubs at 14 down in the country?
No, I never drink.
You don't drink?
No, never touch it.
Any particular reason?
Well, I've seen too many problems with it.
Yeah.
That was the reason I was on the street when I was 8 years of age.
Because of the drink? Other people's drinking.
Well, what happened, I opened a tin of asparagus and I didn't like them.
Yeah.
And a woman seen the tin in the rubbish bin and she said, "You mongrel," and called me a couple other names.
Yeah.
And, she hit me on the head or went to hit me head with a claw hammer and I had the pillow over my head.
Right, yeah.
And I had to get out of the bed and take off. He said, I want to get out of this house now. I'll never come back again.
So when you came back from the country to Melbourne, do you have any money in your pocket? Have you saved anything?
No, I saved a little bit, but not much.
Not much. So how did you survive here in Melbourne as a 14-year-old?
Well, I went British labouring then.
At 14?
And then about 3 months later, they said, Laurie, you can handle a brick that's good. Get on the brick carton. And then I went on the brick carton when I was 14 and a half.
Right. What did that entail?
Driving the truck, and I got £18 a week.
Hang on, you were driving a truck at 14 in 1954.
Yes, and when I was 16, I went over to South Australia and got a licence.
Right. So you were carting bricks in Melbourne for 2 years at 14 without a licence.
I was never worried. If you had a job, they never worried you. But if you were walking around the streets and you're in a week and you didn't have a job, they want to know which way you're coming from, you know.
Oh, right. So if you're gainfully employed, the cops couldn't care less.
No, they didn't. Never.
Never.
Because one or two said to me, Laurie, any time you want a roof over your head, it's always a bed in my joint, you know.
Oh, right.
But that's how it was. Everybody was on the same level then, though.
Right. So everybody was trying to scrape a living, basically.
Oh, well, there was no racist business. There was nothing because I had girlfriends that I'd pick up in that Dodge truck when I got it when I was 14.
All right.
And one was German, Judah, the girl I was running around with.
Yeah.
And then Margaret Bibby, she was English.
Yeah.
And Kathy Whittle, she was Australian, you know.
Right.
And we all just got on together. I'd say on one condition, I'll take you to the drive-in. I want 2 Blue Heaven milkshakes. And I want 2 hot dogs. And then I sit 2 in the boot, so I didn't pay for the 3 of them, only paid for the one sitting beside me.
Yeah. You realise, Daryl, you're a bit younger than both of us, although I'm younger than Lawrence, but that was a very popular thing until
there was no TV then days, you see. It didn't come out until 56.
That's right.
You could buy a TV, a 17-inch, and you could go buy a terraced house in Collingwood or Carlton at that time for £1,200, you know?
Yeah.
And the time you paid Ferris 17-inch TV off, you'd probably be paying £1,200 anyway.
So where were you living when you were 14, 15? In the CBD, in Carlton, Fitzroy, Collingwood?
No, I was sleeping in the car.
You were sleeping in the car?
Yep.
What were you doing with all your bloody money if you're getting £18 a week? That's a lot of money.
Yeah, I hung on to it.
Oh, you hung on to it?
Well, yep.
Well, did you put it in the bank or did you just put it
in
your bank?
Never went near banks.
Say what? Sat in your back pocket?
No, I had it planted in my car.
All right. Okay. Lucky your car wasn't stolen. Well, I couldn't steal it because you're in it.
They never used to knock off cars the way they did. Until the FJ Holden come along, that's all they could knock off. You didn't need a key, bit of silver paper.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And they used to go to the drive-in over there at Preston.
Yeah.
And they used to change the number plates because the coppers would be sitting at the back there checking all the number plates when they went in.
Yeah.
If they had a hot car, they'd go and get them.
Yeah.
But they used to put a bit of toothpaste on the number plate to change it from a 3 to an 8. Or 1 into a 4.
Yeah, and they crossed their fingers it wasn't going to rain that night.
That's what I was doing well with them girls because the bloke that had them before me, he had the motorbike, the English bloke.
Yeah.
And when I come along with the Dodge car, that was the end of his motorbike and all the girls, I got them.
Oh, right.
Because it's no good at the drive-in on a motorbike. Yeah.
And they talk about wasted youth these days. I think Lawrence, he didn't waste his youth. So how
long... I just think to anybody, I'll say to them now, the best thing you can have in your life is your health and money.
Right.
That's all you need. I mean that.
Oh, it's true.
See, I've got this. I bought this in 82.
What did you buy in 82?
This house.
Oh, the one
in
Rosanna. So where did you... With all this money you were collecting, you know, that you hid in the truck, in the Dodge... What did you do with it?
I put it away.
Yeah, but did you buy anything with it? Did you buy a house or anything?
When I bought this house, you know what I had?
What?
A double bed.
Yep.
And a refrigerator.
Right.
And I had nothing, everything I've got in the joint. I bought either second hand or from St. Vincent's or somewhere like that, you know.
Right, right.
And I've got about 10 TVs that I've picked up in the street when they're throwing them out, and I've got them all working.
Right. Well, yeah.
One gave me a 52-inch one.
Yeah.
He said, Laurie, they can have this, and they give it to me.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't need a set-top box for it. It's sitting there about $1,500 worth.
Yeah. Well, let's go back. Were you involved in any of the unions at that particular point in time, or were you just freelancing when you were a youngster?
No, I wasn't into any union, no.
No. When
They got me once with carting the bricks.
Yeah.
And I changed from Clifton Brickyard, from Barclay Brickyard over to Clifton.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't get me again because I wasn't under my right name, I suppose.
Yep.
Because you didn't have to worry about that.
No, well, it was legal to have an alias in those days.
Yeah, well, that was it.
Yeah.
Well, Norm Gallagher said that. He said, I can have a bank account in any name I want to have it in. It's my business, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So
no, and they never got me, and I moved ahead of them. But it wouldn't have worried me because I would have paid it anyway.
Right, so you never joined a union?
No.
Yeah.
If I had to do something where I had to have a... go on the building site or something like that after I finished the brick cart and I went cart and scaffold them.
Right.
You had to be a bit careful there, but I had to have another bloke's ticket, you see.
Ah, right.
Just show the ticket because it didn't have your photo on it them days.
Right, right.
I think you got them on now.
Right.
And then I had the old thing sent out to me with the Transport Workers Union and I flashed it the other way. It'd be an English bloke out at the hospital out at Footscray.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, no, that's right, mate. He said, we're just checking to make sure you're in the union.
Right.
I said, I've got a bit of news for you. I haven't paid. They sent this out to me and it had Transport Workers Union on the top of it. And I flashed it.
Right.
And he didn't look at it much, you know, when he seen that Transport Workers Union. No, I never worried about it.
Never worried. Did you get involved in any of the strikes in the 60s and 70s when things were moving with the bailiff?
Oh, yeah. When we were out starting scaffolding after the bricks, things were bad. The building trade was down until Kane got into power.
Right.
And he got things moving. But, we were out for a long time because Norm Gallagher used to come in. He used to say, oh, they're 20 bucks short, you know.
Yeah.
And when they come to the party, we'll all go back to work. But then again, he done a lot of good for us. We got holiday pay and sick day pay for us and all that type of thing, you see.
Right.
Because we had none of that.
No.
They never worried about me like when I was brick carting, as long as I could drive the truck.
Yeah.
And throw off the 2,000 bricks, and I could throw off 2,000 bricks either side. And like on the nature strip, film in 22 minutes. 8 tons.
Right. So
three times a day.
You're a human conveyor belt.
Yeah, but I was fit.
How did you keep? Oh well, if you're throwing around thousands of bricks, you're going to be fit. Or did you do things to? Did you do exercise, or was just the work you were doing?
I just the brick carting, and I'd get up and do 620 push-ups of a morning.
Excuse me. Can I feel sick? Can you repeat that, Laurie?
Hey?
Can you repeat that? I'm feeling sick. Did I hear you say you did 620 push-ups in the morning?
Well, I could do in the army, when I went in there, I could do 1,240 push-ups.
Hang on. When did you go into the army?
That was in 14 days before I turned 18. I was still only 17 then.
But
I was brick carting. I was so strong upstairs, you know?
Yeah.
And I could do 5,500 sit-ups. Until I started getting a bit of problem in the back, and I give that away.
Right. Oh, Daryl's on the floor. He's So.
Well, I'm still
hang on. No, we'll go that in a minute. I'm just interested in this, the fact that you've joined the army. Why did you join the army? Why did you join the army? That would have been 1958, 57, 58?
No, it was 14 days. 14 days before I turned 18, I was still only 17.
Right, so 58, you joined the army. Any particular reason?
When I was 17.
17.
And then they just put you on the list, and when they want to make up the intake, and then they dragged me in. I was the youngest in my unit.
You weren't conscripted. You were a volunteer, or were you conscripted? What?
No, I was conscripted.
In 58?
You know who else got conscripted with me?
Yeah, who?
And he got out with a hearing problem, John Howard.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you could sing out for him. You could be a mile away from him in Canberra. Yeah. But there you go, Johnny. He'd stop and wave to you. There's nothing wrong with his hearing. Beasley got out because he had a heart murmur. Well, he's carried a bit too much weight, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And that got him out. And Malcolm Turnbull got out because he had feet problems, flat feet or something.
Yeah, and did Laurie get out?
We'd all be speaking whisper sayonara. Now we're speaking Japanese.
Right. So...
No, I didn't worry.
So you joined... Well, you were conscripted when you were 18. So
yeah, but what happened to me... I was going away over to Butterworth.
Yep.
Over in Malaya.
Yep.
And we're going into Laos from there. Uh-huh. We had to drive out. The Viet Cong was hitting the airbase we had there.
Right.
And we had the Canberra bombers there. Uh-huh. And about 3 days before, I got blown up out at the back of Dunalquin. You know Dunalquin?
Here in New South Wales.
Between that and Hay, yeah, we were exercising out there, and I got hit. Mortar shells come in, I was lining up the landlines,
right. And
I lost my eyesight. And I went to the repat the next day because I couldn't see out of both eyes because I had high flames in both of them.
Uh-huh.
And then they put me straight into a car and took me straight to the Eye and Ear Hospital, and I was in there for 4.5-5 months.
Right. So
I got a sight back in the left one, but I never got it back in the right one. And that's what I'm going for now, for a claim for the damages. So that I got.
Well, they never recognised that you had...
No. They still haven't recognised it. I've got the Veteran Affairs, the ANZAC House, and they're handling it all for me now.
Yeah.
And I said, it's gone on since 2018. I said, it's 7 years ago when I first got in touch with you.
Right.
I was entitled to the compensation for this right eye, and they sent me back to the same doctor. He had to fill out the thing to say, no, it's dead.
Yeah.
And it's Dynamo or some name they use for it.
Hmm.
And he said, this is the third time they sent you to me, Laurie. I said, yeah. I said, well, it's not my problem, it's their problem.
Hmm.
And the RSL couldn't do anything for me, and then the ANZAC House got in touch with me about 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Now they've taken that up again for me. They've got to.
Yeah,
because I'm entitled to it.
Yeah, but Laurie, hang on, I'm a bit confused. Yeah, you were blown up in Deniliquin. You were blinded. You were in the I&E here in Melbourne for four.
Yeah, I come back that night.
Yeah, for 4 months. Yeah. I understand. Well, I'm just trying to piece things together for the listeners, right? So. Were you discharged from the army?
No, they discharged me while I was in the Royal Melbourne because it was June in 1960 was the end of the National Service.
Right.
And they didn't start it up again until 64, you see.
That's right, but
we were in Vietnam in 60 because the Americans were there in 54 before the French pulled out.
Right.
And the CIA would have been there before that too, you see.
So what, they just said, thanks, Laurie, piss off. That was it. No compensation, nothing.
No. Nothing.
Nothing.
You're still breathing. You didn't come back in a body bag.
Yeah.
And I said, if I had a went, I said, you would have put me up the sharp edge all the time because I don't have a family. I don't have relations.
Right.
And if something goes wrong, they just got to throw you into a hole. And that's it.
That's it.
Nobody knows you existed.
No.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
So what happened once you were discharged? How did you get on?
Well, I got the sight back, a bit of sight in this left one.
Yeah.
I had my head bandaged up for the 4 months, both eyes.
Right.
Done like a mummy.
Yeah.
And I had to be hand-fed and washed down by girls that was my age.
Right.
You know, some of them were younger.
Yeah.
And then the bloke, he passed away, the head bloke at the Ioneer, he was at the university as well. He used to bring in the students at 2 o'clock in the morning to have a look at perfect high femurs in my eyes.
Right,
so
right.
They don't know what to look for.
Just for people that don't know, it's bleeding. It's bleeding in the eye. People don't know what a high femur is, I'm afraid.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Both eyes were bleeding. But the right one was knocked about too much.
Right, right. But when much. when you were discharged from the army and the Ioneer, how did you survive?
Well, I went and got a room in McKean Street in North Fitzroy.
Right.
$6 a week.
So there was no pension, nothing?
No, nothing. Nothing.
Nothing. Just showing the door and that was it.
Yep.
Yeah, it's amazing how they treat return service
people.
Oh, yeah, isn't
but
it?
That's the way it was them time. You never said anything. And they said, well, when I found out who my birth mother was, her brother, she had a twin brother.
Yeah.
And he was Jack Turner.
Yeah.
And he was a rat at the Brook.
Right.
And he came back and he never drank. And then when he came back, they told me he was 42. Alcohol got to him, and that was the end of him, you know?
Yeah. Well,
but they went through a lot there, like in the road at the Brook, because he'd be there for the last one, sort of, still alive, you know?
Yeah.
So he was the one that got Ron Barassi's father when he got killed, and he told him not to go worry about the bakery. And the snooker come down and got him.
Right.
And they got him back in the trenches, but he'd been gone, you see?
Yes.
And they dragged him back again.
Right.
And, that come up about that.
So how old were you when you were discharged from the army?
I was 19.
And so you had to find $6 a week.
No, I hadn't turned. See, I turned, if I had been August, I got discharged in June.
Mm.
If it had been August, I would have been 20, you see.
Right.
Because I was born the 25th of August, 1940.
Right.
You see.
So how did you survive?
Well, I went back when my eyesight got a bit better. Right. Went back brick carting again.
Brick carting? What, you still had the Dodge?
No, I got my own truck later on.
Right.
I've still got the truck beside the house here. I bought it in 1972.
Right.
And I brick carted right up until the hand carting had finished. There's no more hand carting. It's all done with cranes now.
Yeah.
And,
So how many years were you brick carting?
From when I was 14 until I went in the army.
Right.
And then back into it again at 19 again.
Right.
And 60, you see. Oh, well, I knew, it's the only thing I could do because it was either that or go brickish labouring. And the bloke said to me, he said, Laurie, he said, you handle the brick too well for a brickish labourer.
Right.
Get on the brick carting.
Yeah.
And the money was there, you see.
Yeah.
As I told you, when I was 14, I was getting 18 quid a week, and that's big money.
That was huge money for then, 1954.
If I had the shearing sheds, I would have got money like that in the shearing sheds too.
Right.
But I never picked up a hand piece and went the other way, you know.
Right, right. So how long did you brick cart for?
Well, from 14 up until about 90s, into the 90s.
Into the 90s?
Yeah, into the 90s, yep. And then it finished.
Right.
It's all done with the cranes, and I wanted you to outlay $300,000 and buy a truck and get a trailer and get a forklift on the back of it, and you'd be up for about $400,000. I said, anybody that had to go into Larundel or Mont Park or something, you know?
Yeah.
So all you had to do was do what I done. I bought a truck from Timson's, a truck wrecker, as long as it could drag 8 ton.
Yeah.
You put 8 ton on it. The bed, and I had that right up until 72 when I bought this Dodge, and I bought a brand new.
Right.
And I've still got it, and it's in beautiful condition still.
Right.
And I keep it registered.
What colour is it?
It's green.
Green Dodge. God, that.
And I had it done up, resprayed up in a two-pack.
Yeah.
And then I got the grill done, the four headlight one with the white grill in the front of it, and I got big white bull bars on it.
Right.
It's a fabulous looking truck, I tell you.
Yeah, I hope nobody pinches it, mate.
The best thief in Melbourne never be able to start that truck up. I put a big Hino diesel into it.
Right.
And it's 24 volts and they can't start it. Only me. I'll probably give it away to blokes up at Coal Lake and they can put it in the museum because it's such good condition, you know.
It sounds like it, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. It's in the garage here. I put the garage up beside the house when I bought it.
Right, so when did you buy the house?
In 82.
82. And what made you finally buy a house?
Well, the bloke didn't approve of me having a dog, my dog where I was living.
All right.
The estate agents couldn't come in and check the house. And I said, you can only check up when I'm here.
Yeah.
And they said, we can't check up when you're not here because that dog, it's a Doberman and it wants right. to go crooked. I said, well, you shouldn't be coming into the house.
Right. Well, you know, every renter needs a Doberman, I reckon.
Yeah, and then people that owned the house, they said, Laurie, we don't want you to move. And they got rid of Doherty's estate agents. So I said, no, don't worry about it. I said, I've already bought a house. I'll be waiting 3 months to move into it.
Right.
That's when I bought this one. It was 18.5% interest rates then.
That's right.
And I put down $34,000. I just had to borrow
$10,000. Right.
And I could have paid it off that year, and I paid it off the next year because I spent a bit of work on it, put the big high brick fence out the front, the retaining wall down the driveway, pulled all the windows out and put the aluminium windows in with the cedar panels, and I've done everything to it, you know.
Right.
It's not the house, it's the land.
It's the land, yeah.
It's the area too.
Right, right. How's that new development that they're doing, does it affect you? Because you're in Rosanna, they're extending that road.
Yeah, well, that's down in front of me. That's over there where they're putting the tunnel through.
Balloon. Yeah.
Yeah. When you come here, it was I've probably got the best view of any house in the area. Nobody's in front of me. Overlooks three streets, and that's all over there. And all you see is the big cranes.
Right. Right. You know. Yeah, it's massive. Massive. What? There must be thousands of people working there.
Yeah, there's about 8,000 in there, I think.
8,000.
They park in front of my house here.
Do they? I hope you charge them, mate.
I don't care, because as long as they've got a job and they're making money.
Right.
Looking after their families, you know.
Yeah. Did you ever get into the family way?
No.
Right.
Once I'd done my eyes, it was into my love life.
Right.
Because the girls used to say, Laurie, when we look into your blue eyes, it's like looking into the sky.
That was before.
and then when the other one went, this other one, the sight never came back in. Yeah. I never liked the blueness of it.
Right.
When the blood drained out, it went from a green colour back into the blue.
Yeah.
And then it went dead, the muscles in it, because I wouldn't see him for over 10 years, you see.
Yeah.
And the muscles go, and the blue part disappears and it goes to a white in the centre, you know.
That's
it,
right.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. I put a contact lens over it.
Right.
The same colour as my blue eye on the other side.
Oh, right.
And I put the dark glasses on. Yeah. And they don't know the difference then. And now I tell them, I said, no, I'm not interested because I've got too much money now.
You got too much money. look, I wouldn't tell people that, mate. I wouldn't tell people that.
Yeah, but I just tell them that.
That's fair enough.
The woman down the road, she's not very far from here, and she's going to divorce her husband.
Yeah.
And he was a big shot. He bought a certain factory just over the Westgate Bridge and paid $366 million for it.
Yeah.
And I had to pick her up from the Peter McCauley Clinic because I was working for his company when I gave away the brick carton.
Yeah.
And I'd bring her home and she said, I'm going to divorce John.
Yeah.
And she's divorced him for $46 million. Mm. She said, I want you to come to Europe with me and we'll go back. And they were originally from Ireland.
Yeah.
I said, I'll come to the moon with you for $46
million. Yeah. Well, we won't go down that path, mate. We don't want to name people on here. It doesn't work that way, you know.
But anyway, it came back and I never seen her. But I only met her when I was walking my dog.
Right.
And I wouldn't have known.
Well, that's it.
Yeah. But she lives in the area. That's what I thought. Not anymore now because they've all passed away.
So some little fairy told me that you got involved with 3CR in the early days. Is that right?
Yeah.
What happened?
Some scaffolding then. That was in what's his name street around
Cromwell Street. Yeah.
Yeah.
What, you did the scaffolding?
Yeah, and because he came into the on the building site.
Who's he? Who's Gallagher? Oh, Norm Gallagher, yeah. Yeah.
And I said, yeah, I can carter for you. I said, I'm working there for the bone.
Yeah.
That was Peter Walsh.
Yeah.
And that's why I went on to that after the bricks were finished.
Yeah.
And then I just took it there, and that was about 76 or something.
That's right. That's 100% correct. 76. Yeah.
And
Did you go into the studios? Did you go into 3CR?
No, I just unloaded it there.
Right, right.
And I just keep moving because it's a pretty fast game that year, you know.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm waiting, got all hands waiting, and I haven't got the gear.
Yeah, yeah.
It costs a bit of money. Going all the time, you know.
Right. So how long have you been listening to 3CR?
Oh, since you started.
76?
Yep.
I can't believe it. You must be one of our oldest listeners.
Yep.
Well, any particular programs you like?
Oh, well, it's better now because I get a better reception. Before, it wasn't as good.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think they done something with the aerial there or something. That's better reception now.
Yeah.
I've got that many wirelesses in the house here, and I've got one beside the bed that's on 3CR all the time.
Right.
The one here in the kitchen, I have it on because I listen to Anne too.
Yeah,
she comes on. That's the Irish show, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You like that
show?
She
came. Yeah, I helped her out with left a bit of money for her, and she came on. First time I met her this year.
Right.
I didn't know who she was when she pulled up. I thought she was just visiting somebody.
All right, and you're the person who's been visited.
Yeah, she said, "Laurie, you said you'd be able to help me out."
All right.
And I said, who am I talking to? She said, Anne. I didn't know it was her.
Yeah, all that happens.
I've got big gates out the front.
You sound like a bit of a hoarder, mate. 17 televisions, radios everywhere, bloody Dodge truck in the shed.
I'm a stepdad, son, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like people, I had nothing, and I never bought a coloured TV until I paid the house off.
Right.
And I only had a black and white one.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I bought that, about 86. Mm. Yeah, I bought a couple of people, a second-hand one.
Mm.
And now I've got 10 of them right through every bedroom, every part of the house.
Right.
What can I say? I'm out walking the dog in the night, and if I see it there, I'll come home and get the truck and throw it on if they're dumping it out.
Hang on. The dog? You got dogs?
Yeah, I used to walk them all the time.
How many dogs you got?
I got two now.
What do you got?
I got a bull mastiff deer hound that I've had for about 6 months.
Right.
And I got, I lost my other one, Jo. She was a greyhound.
Uh-huh.
She got something wrong with her head.
Right.
And she couldn't get up, and I picked her up for about 3 months, and then I had to put her to sleep because she couldn't empty out and do anything, you know.
Right.
And then I got Rose. She's here now. She's beautiful. She's 4 years old.
Right.
And she's fallen in love with Champ, the other dog I got, Bullmastiff.
The Bullmastiff, yeah.
She's come out of her shell since he's been here because she's that jealous of him.
All right.
Yeah, he's the most affectionate dog I've ever seen in my life.
Right.
Huge.
He sounds pretty vicious.
Nah.
How did you come across him?
Well, the bloke next door, he's a multi-millionaire bloke that owned the house.
Yeah.
And he does all, you know, Daimaru, the all the buildings in the city.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he puts in all the petitions in every floor and all that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I knew he had a lot of place working for him because he told me he bought 300 high aces.
Right.
Vans.
That's a lot of vans.
30 of them, I mean, not 300.
30, yeah. Still a lot of vans, yeah.
The girl next door, she works for him because her father works for him too.
Right.
And so, he moved back to his mansion house in East Ivanhoe.
Right.
And he was getting that done up.
Right.
And he said to the bloke, he said, see, Laurie, he used to hear me talk to my other dog.
Yeah, yeah.
Honey.
Yeah.
And he said, was like I was talking to a human being, you know.
Yeah, yeah. He knew you loved dogs, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's been my family all my life.
Right.
And because you come into my bedroom, it's like going into a cemetery. I've got all four dogs in the dressing table drawer, get them cremated.
All right, yep, yep. At least you don't get them stuffed.
When I go, they can throw us all in the same hole together.
Yeah, well, have you made arrangements for that? Because if you don't, it's not going
to
happen.
I've got a thing done. He just sent it out to me from David Whiting.
Yeah.
In Queen Street.
Oh, yeah.
He's on the ABC.
Yeah, the lawyer there. Yeah, the lawyer, the solicitor, yeah.
And he said, you've got to do it. And he sent the letter out to me. Yeah. And I said, well, I'll come in about 3 weeks, 4 weeks' time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's only because if I don't do it, the government will take it.
That's right, because you've got no living relatives. The government will take
exactly.
Everything.
That's what I mean, mate. Yeah.
You want to make sure that, you know, you've worked hard for what you've got. You want to make sure that...
Well, everything I've got, I've worked for.
Yeah, you want to make sure it goes to...
Nobody's ever bought anything for me. When I bought the Bedford, I bought that from Timsey's and done the motor up on it.
Yeah.
And I only paid $500, but that's how you start off.
Yeah.
You see now this Dodge truck and that everybody wants to buy it off me. Lindsay Fox wants it.
Right.
you'd be the last brick I'd send it to.
Well, that's I understand, mate. Now, I was going to ask you, again, why 3CR? Why have you been a listener for almost 50 years? What is it about the programs that you enjoy or like?
Well, I used to always listen to the... the two blokes and the other bloke, the Irish show every week.
The Celtic Club, yeah.
Yeah, before Anne took over.
Right.
There was a woman on there with a German surname.
Right.
And, I'd listen to it every week because, well, everybody sort of likes the Irish. But, well, there's that many Irish among us here, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I wouldn't know what I got in me, but... I was born blonde hair, completely blonde, so I could have a bit of German in me somewhere along the line, I think.
I assume so, yeah.
But everything changed as I got older. And when I went to the army, I had to have my hair cut short all the time, but I used to plaster it with Californian poppy so it wasn't sticking out. Make it look more...
you would have smelt nice, Laurie. You would have smelt nice. Yeah. That's the main thing.
No. You never put old spice on or anything like that. Somebody would say, hey, you didn't smell like that. We all smelt the same, like a drover's dog. You know?
Oh, yes, full of sweat.
Because you couldn't smell one another. We never used that until later on in years. The old spice come along. That's probably the best one you can buy, too.
Well, you wouldn't. Carting bricks, you wouldn't need old spice, would you?
Yeah.
It's the last thing you'd need. So,
that's when I was in the Iron Ear.
Yeah.
And they used to come in 1, 2 o'clock in the morning with the students.
Yeah.
And he'd have half a dozen of them with him.
Yeah.
And three would be girls, and when they'd put their cheek on my cheek to have a look into me high femurs of the eye, they smelled beautiful.
That's right.
When the bloke's done it, I wasn't too rapt.
No, that's the way it goes, mate. That's the way
it goes. The way it was, yeah.
Now, you said health. You said
health. You probably heard of his name. He was a head man of the Iron Ear, and he passed away last year, beginning of the year.
Yeah, I can't remember him either.
And he ran all the university, too.
Did he? Oh, sounds like a good bloke.
Yeah.
Now, Laurie.
When I went to the repat the day after I come home and I didn't have the sight and I wasn't getting it in the right eye, it was just a bit in the left eye.
Yeah.
And then I went in. They didn't put me into a bed. They don't. If they put you into a bed, they put you on the record.
All right.
I done was organise the taxi to take me straight into the Iron Ear Hospital.
So that's why you're having so much trouble getting compensation.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't exist.
And I've given where we camped up at Echuca before we moved into Deniliquin. We took over the whole showgrounds at Echuca.
Yeah.
We had all the equipment.
Yeah.
And one night I went to come in to get into bed, and we had a swag made up on the floor where the straw was. And as I went to get in my bed, there was a brown snake in my bed. At least a man, you should have spent all the blacks.
Yeah, you would have run.
Yeah, well, I said, Jesus.
Now, at the beginning you said the two things you need is health and money. Now, we've spoken about money. Now, how do you keep healthy? How do you keep healthy? You're 85.
Well,
you got all your marbles. Talking to you,
Up until 80, yeah. I was walking every night from here, Greensboro, just before you get to Lower Plenty Road.
Yep.
Over to Summerhill Shopping Centre and Reservoir, and back home again every night with my dog.
That's at least 12 k's. That's at least 12 k's.
Yeah. Have a look on the Melways, so you'll get it.
Yeah, it's about.
So I go up through the factory area because there's no pollution or anything through there late at night.
Right, so walking.
Then I go across where the lake is into the Latrobe and go across into Summerhill Road.
Right.
And walk up to the shopping centre.
So keeping active.
Yeah, but I kept myself fit every morning. So I've done my push ups every morning, I've done my sit ups.
How many push ups would you do every morning?
I was doing 640.
What? When you were 80?
Yep.
640 push-ups every morning?
Yeah, I could do them easy.
And how about sit-ups?
And you know, a couple of times I said, I'll see where I'm at. I said, yeah, I'm on blood pressure tablets now. I've been on them since I was 80.
Right.
10. And they said, Laurie, you've got to think of your blood pressure. Your heart can give out. And I went up over an 80.
Yeah.
And I was nearly going up to 90, and I said, stop now, you imbecile. Your heart will give out on you, you know?
Yeah.
That's how you do them. You lock your brain in with your heart and your body, and you do them in tens.
Right. 10, 20, 30.
And then when you get over 100, 120, and you go back again, you start going up again. But if you've done, 1, 2, 3, 4, you'd never get there.
So basically you're saying physical activity is essential if you want to grow old gracefully.
It's how you keep yourself. See, I don't drink, I don't smoke.
Right.
I work hard, you know, it's always manual work.
And
I'm fit.
Yeah.
I dug that when I put the high brick fence out. I done that in 2 hours there.
Hang on.
You put the front of the house.
You put up your own brick fence.
Yep.
How old were you?
I done the retaining wall out the front.
How old were you?
I was in my 40s then when I done that.
Right. Yeah.
I was 42 when I bought the house.
Right.
And the next year I had the fence up.
Right.
I'll be 43. Yeah.
Right.
I done the retaining wall at front, and I done my driveway myself.
Right.
14 foot wide, 10 feet past the back of the house here.
Right.
And I bring the truck right in, and I put the garage up beside the house.
Now
I built that myself. And I put a carport up when I was 80.
Right.
At the front. And I got the high ace van underneath it, and they said, Laurie, how'd you get up? I said, I got it home on my truck, and I got it for nothing. The bloke give it to me.
Right.
Because I was going to give him... I said, I'll go to 1,000 on it. It's good quality.
Yeah.
And he's an Irishman. He said, tell Laurie, he said, he can have that carport for nothing, but he's got to have it out before Monday. That was on the Saturday. And I was up Sunday with my truck.
Right.
And kicked it down on the back of my truck and got it through the gates here on about a half an inch either side getting in the driveway.
Yeah.
And then I put it down for about a couple of months and then put it up, put heavier legs on it.
Right.
So I do everything myself.
Right.
Yes. And I'm alone the other way, you know.
Yeah. Now, Laurie, you've been around a while. You've had lots of positive and negative experiences. You got any advice for us, you know, losers listening to you about, you know, people like Daryl and me, you know, that need a bit of prodding? What do you suggest we do? Well, I don't drink.
Grab a dog and start walking and start doing a few push-ups.
Grab a dog, start walking and do a full push-ups. What do you reckon about that, Daryl?
Anyone's dog?
You could borrow a dog.
I've done it. When I was on brick carton, that's why I was so fit at 14.
Yeah.
So I've done them all my life. And when I went in the army, the blokes were there and they said they'd never seen anybody do push-ups like me. I said, nobody can do 1,240, only me. But see, I don't smoke.
Yeah.
I don't never take a narcotics or anything like that.
Right.
I live a different life, you know.
Yeah. Well, the type of life people don't lead in 2025.
Yeah, but see, now, most of the most of the girls are on that amphetamines and that around.
Nah, there. Around where you are.
Yeah.
Oh God, that's the last thing you need. The last thing is to be on meth.
That's what I never get near them. Yeah, the moment they say, "Oh, call in and we'll have a," I got some good gear to take, and I said, "Yeah, you've just lost me straight away."
Yeah. Yeah, oh, well, you've got principles, and you've lived your life the way you wanted to live. And
well, I meant to say it. The best thing you can have, as I said to you before, is your health, mate.
Well, it's the only thing. Doesn't matter how rich you are.
Health.
Doesn't matter high and mighty you are.
Once you've got the money, you don't have to scroll up to anybody when you want anything. You buy yourself.
Yeah, but if you haven't got your health and you've got the money, it doesn't help.
You know. Don't borrow off your house, you know, when I paid this off in the 12 months.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, when you want to do anything, if you want to get a bigger truck and cart the bricks and all that, there's a $400,000. I said, I'm not going into that. I said, that 9-ton truck beside the house, that done the job for me.
Right. Well, Laurie, all I can say is it's been a pleasure speaking to you. As I said, you're one of our long-term listeners here at 3CR. And it's people like you which give us the courage to continue broadcasting, because obviously most of the people, like Daryl and myself, we're volunteers, and most of the people you hear are volunteers here at 3CR. And it's good to know that we've got people of your calibre listening to this station.
Well, that's the reason I've listened, because you started off from the ground floor when you're down in Cromwell Street.
Yep.
You got better reception now.
Yep.
Out here, but I don't think I had a transistor gone on the fridge here. It's a very powerful one.
Yeah.
And I get you good beside me bed inside with the cheaper one beside the bed.
Laurie, it's good to know we go to bed with you. 3CR goes to bed with you. Okay, mate?
Yeah, thanks for the call, Jay.
Yeah, thanks very much, and it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I'll give you a call.
And she came here, I told you that.
Yeah, well, the program's going to be podcast, which means it goes up forever, so we'll let Anne know. All right?
Yeah, thanks, mate,
I'll give you a call in a few weeks just a chat. Okay, mate?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Look after yourself too, mate.
Same to you. I won't be doing those push-ups, but I may get a dog and start walking. Thanks, Laurie.
You got to start from the ground floor, mate. Don't start doing them at your age.
Exactly.
Your jam tart might give out on
you. I'm sure it would after three.
When they said that, Laurie, don't go anywhere up there. And I said, well, I got up to 800. They said at 80 years of age, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the way I've kept myself.
All right, give us a call on Talkback. We've got to go now. Thanks, mate.
I'll see you, Joe. Thanks for the call, mate.
That's okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, you have been listening to Radical Australia with presenter Joe Toscano and special guest Laurie Turner here on 3CR Community Radio, 8:55 AM on your dial, online at 3cr.org.au, and this program is being podcasted.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.